Broadcast of the Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series is made possible in part by ProLiance Energy. ProLiance, adding power to energy. Information is at ProLiance.com.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. This month's speaker is journalist John Stossel. Stossel recently joined the Fox Business Channel, but spent many years co-anchoring and reporting for ABC's 2020. Stossel is especially known for his critical look at everything from taxes to organic foods. Stossel says he's a libertarian. He told the club that when businesses compete for customers, they provide better products. And the same might be said for government.
Thank you. Let me just correct one small point. It's not that I will be leaving ABC. I'm out. I'm toast. They've stopped me from continuing my blog, and I'm on vacation. So happy to be here, though this is an economics group. From prevailing wisdom in newsrooms I've been in, this is the axis of evil. Capitalists, businessmen. I will get to that. Let's talk about health care because it's the subject of the day. And the president has a point when he says he's right, although many of you disagree with him these days. He says the current system is unsustainable. But that's just true. I mean, Medicare is $36 trillion in the hole. That's the unfunded liability. That's how much more they promise to pay for us baby boomers, than they will ever have to pay. And people who collect Medicare say, what do you mean? I paid into the trust fund and I'm just getting back what I paid out. Well, actually, you're getting back 2 to 3 times what you paid in. And there's no trust fund. The politicians spent the money the day you paid it in. It's what they always do. This is a Ponzi scheme. We locked Bernie Madoff up for this. What Congress is doing is a much bigger one. So it is unsustainable. There will be death panels of some sort. There will be some bureaucrat who's going to say if they're spending the public's money, well, no, you can't have this experimental drug. It's too expensive. You're too old. Somebody's got to make those decisions because there's not endless money. So we have Obamacare. But is that better? I mean, the media mindlessly calls it health care reform, health reform. I think that's their bias. It's always the bias of the media to think that government acting is reform. But reform, if you look it up in the dictionary, says improvement. How do they know it's improvement? I mean, have most laws that have been passed been improvement? This is what built America. This is the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution. I mean, together, it's this thin. Now we have 60,000 pages of tax code alone. Is that improvement? I don't think so. I think Obamacare will make health care more expensive and give us fewer choices. All the plans call for more health insurance, government insurance and private insurance. But insurance, as the clips alluded to, mean somebody else pays for you. Third parties pay. So that means they decide what you can get, and it costs more because no third party ever spends your money as well as you do. It's just obvious. I mean, compare most of health care, which is insurance covered now, with the tiny areas of health care that people pay for things themselves, where you have an actual free market, where the customer and the provider deal directly. And that's, as the clip showed, LASIK eye surgery, cosmetic surgery is the same deal. What are those places like? Well, the waiting rooms are nice. The doctors give out their email addresses and their cell phones. Does your doctor do that? Why? Well, of course, because they're trying to please the customer. That's what all of you do in business, because a third party isn't paying. And the result, quality keeps going up and the prices go down. They have to be nice to their customers so they try harder. And this shouldn't surprise us. We've seen that the free market does this all the time. We don't think about it. We don't think that the supermarket is open nearly all the time and well lit and carries 30,000 products. And they're unbelievably cheap if you think about it, and they rarely poison people. All guided by this invisible hand that we just accept as normal. And we get better computers and cars and cell phones, all this stuff that we keep inventing. And even our government crippled healthcare system has been more innovative than government, more government dominated systems. If you ask doctors, what are the most valuable innovations of the past 20 years? And it's things like MRIs and cholesterol lowering statins and robotic limbs. 90% of them were invented in America. People say, well, look, the central planners in Europe are doing okay, and Europeans live longer than we do, and they spend a fraction. Well, one reason their health systems allow them to do pretty well is because they're freeloading off America's innovation. If government controls the American system, the innovation goes. And that's the most important thing, the innovation, the things her company, I hope, is developing. That's what's really going to make our lives safer and better and less pain-filled. I mean, people say the European systems aren't bad because, look, they're keeping people alive longer than Americans live. But that's one of those statistical lies. It is true that they live longer, but they're Europeans. They're different. Now, the Swedes in Minnesota live longer, too. But these countries don't have a large overweight underclass, having babies very young. They don't drive as much as we do, so they don't kill each other in the highway as much. They don't shoot each other as often as we do, and they're not as fat. When you factor that out, we live longer. The other difference in comparing the systems, and it's true, there have been, you've heard the stories about the waiting lines, I won't belabor that, but most people say they like their government-run health care. Of course, most people aren't sick when the pollsters call, but still, people seem to like these systems. But it takes time for government top-down, centrally planned systems to break down. I mean, at the beginning, you get the eager beavers who come in, like the Peace Corps, and people in government aren't stupider than the rest of the population. They can do things pretty well. But then the systems cause the breakdown. I mean, it took the Soviet Union 70 years to collapse. It happens over time because government-run systems don't innovate. They aren't, like you entrepreneurs, constantly changing things to please the customer. They're following rules. They have. Sometimes they're required to, or they can go to jail. Sometimes there's a change every 4 or 8 years when there's an election. But there usually isn't. I mean, I'm kind of upset that the Soviet Union is gone because we don't have so many models of government failure around to see the threat. We've got, what, Cuba? North, I don't know how long that'll be, communist. North Korea, the post office, the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. We need these models. But perhaps because of these models, I think the big grand government controlled healthcare reform, the public option, maybe dead, I don't know. I think I've read in the paper they're going to pass something, so I suspect they'll pass some smaller reforms, and one of those will be that they'll fix insurance. They'll make it better, kinder, because that's popular. Obama gets huge applause when he says, we're not going to allow discrimination, no cherry picking. And, you know, that sounds good to people. We don't like discrimination in life. Cherry-picking, excluding people because they have a pre-existing condition. And the insurance industry, in its venal ways, has totally caved in on that. Last month, your speaker here, WellPoint CEO Angela Braly, said, oh, yeah, we have already proposed major changes to improve health care, make it more affordable, like opening coverage to all people, regardless of their pre-existing conditions. In return for a mandate that requires everyone to come to us and give us money, requires everyone to have health insurance. Now, this is popular. The other one is community rating. That's popular. We're all in the same community together. It's not right to charge people different prices. But that's not insurance. That's welfare. I mean, insurance companies can perform a valuable function. They can encourage customers to behave better. It's as silly as thinking about fire insurance. What if the fire insurance companies were required to have community rating? That would mean they would have to charge the guy with a rickety wood house and bad wiring the same as the person with the stone house and good smoke detectors. Or car insurance. You'd pay the same rates as Lindsay Lohan. community rating feels good, but that's just going to raise prices even more. Safeway got all kinds of good publicity by saying we self-insure and we have this system where we charge people lower copays if they lose weight or quit smoking and so forth. Under community rating, well, I assume all that will be illegal because one size fits all. That's the rule. And why are the politicians talking so much about health insurance anyway? We ought to be talking about health care. That's what people want. Insurance is the worst form of capitalism in that it's useful, it's a necessary evil, it's risk pooling. But again, the third party will never watch your money the way you do. They worry that you'll cheat them, and some of you would. So they require all that paperwork trying to stop it, and all of that paperwork makes us more miserable and only stops some of the cheating. The only thing that really stops the cheating is when you're spending your own money. And employer-paid health insurance, that's even more foolish. 4 out of 10 Americans now change jobs every year. Why lock them to get their health insurance from their employer? Soon are we going to have employers buying us our food and clothing and shelter? I mean, you've heard the stories of how it's an artifact of the tax code from World War II. The best part of the free market is the constant vigilance of consumers that would have us going to different doctors and comparing prices. But almost nobody does because you're guided by the insurance company. As a consumer reporter, I could really see it when I would do these stories on people in supermarkets, and they would obsess. They'd go carrying their coupons, and they would go to another store to save a nickel on a can of peas. But Lipitor, there were $20 price differences on a bottle because with drugs, people don't compare. My insurance company's paying. So what are we libertarians? I think we have a pocket of them over there, say. We say, I don't know who you are, but God bless you. Let's unleash the free market. It's given us almost all of the good stuff we have that makes our lives better. That means you have to stop handcuffing insurance companies. Allow them to offer different plans. Don't have government telling them what they cover. Allow people to buy out of state so that if your state has stupid rules because you have silly legislators who get lobbied by special interests, like in your state, and you put in rules that say all insurance companies must cover alcoholism treatment and chiropractors and osteopaths and obesity treatment. And if policies in Indiana therefore cost more, you ought to be able to buy one from Illinois or from Michigan. That's illegal now. There ought to be tort reform. There ought to be more health savings accounts. Governor Daniels has offered them now to state employees. I assume most of you know what they are, but just in case, the health savings accounts are really high deductible insurance policies. So if you have a heart attack, you have the insurance for the catastrophe. That's what insurance is supposed to be for, catastrophes. But for more ordinary expenses, up to, say, $4,000, you pay. And because Americans have gotten so used to not paying for their health care, we start by having companies put $4,000 into your health savings account. But then it's your money. And if you don't spend it this year, next year you may have $8,000. And you can spend it, if you want, on the acupuncturist or on the alcohol treatment. It's your choice. And when I talk to the employees of companies that have this, they say interesting things. They say, you know, I never asked what things cost before. I never even thought about it. And now I'll say to the doctor, gee, do I really need that $300 test? I mean, are you just covering yourself because you're worried about being sued? Because I'm paying for this. And the doctor says, like, you know, you're paying, you mean now? I don't have to fill out forms? And, you know, often he may say, well, maybe we don't need the test. Or, well, if you're going to pay now, $150. And then they don't even know where to put the money. They haven't had a cash box in the doctor's office for years. But this letting the free market work starts bringing in some of the reforms that you see in LASIK eye surgery, and things get cheaper. It's the free market, and yet it is still so hated. During the WellPoint CEO speech last week, there were protesters outside, I read, and One had a sign, insurance profits. Insurance profits are bad. And this is a general attitude in America. Profits are bad. Profit means you people are taking money from me. And this is a misconception I'll get into more, but we have a big job ahead to try to educate people that profits are not bad. I mean, when gasoline prices were high, I really wish some oil company CEO would go before the morons in my business and say, why are you complaining about our profit, our record profit? You should be happy we're making more profit. What do you think we do with our profits? Buy fur coats and fancy cars? Well, we do actually, but that's only a tiny percent of it. 99% goes for drilling for new fuel. Don't you want us to do that? Obeying all the environmental rules you want us to obey. It lets us hire more people and do more good things. Profit is good. But the executives don't do that because too few of you want to stick your necks out. I hope you do. I guess just by showing up, you show you're interested in fighting for these things. Other people were outside saying, coverage should be a right, not a privilege. And that feels good to people if you're not really thinking about it. You know, don't we have a right to health care in a rich country? But a right is one thing if it's a right to be left alone. But a right to health care means you have a right to have men with guns force other people to pay money into a system that gives you health care, to take money from other people. I say men with guns because if you don't pay your taxes, men with guns will come and make you pay your taxes. Another person outside said, without a public option, there won't be much difference. So despite the failure of the Soviet Union and their experiences at the Motor Vehicles Department, they still think only a public option will make things better. There's this faith in government that I think comes from our childhood, that mommy and daddy used to take care of us, and we think of the wise elites in Washington and Indianapolis as somehow able to do that same kind of thing that mommy did for you when you were a child, in spite of all the evidence that it doesn't work. It's hard to sell this because there's this intuitive dislike of capitalism. And every newsroom I've been in, people have hated business people. And I'm trying to understand what it's about. And at first I thought it was the envy of the wealth, that you hate your slightly stupider college roommate who went into business and made much more money than you while you're in the politics somewhere, so you want to punish him. But then I thought, it can't just be the wealth disparity, because look at old Europe. Look at the kings and queens and dukes. And people didn't hate them. They revered them. But they hated the bourgeoisie. They hated the, gave them that nasty name. They hated these people who sold them things that made their lives better. What's that about? And that comes back to this hating profit business. I assume that it's because they think that if somebody makes a profit, you lost. And I see why you lawyers think that way and you politicians, because your world does work that way. If one person wins, somebody else loses. But business doesn't work that way, because business is voluntary. Only two ways to do things in life, forced or voluntary. Government is force. Litigation is force. And we need some of that to keep the peace. But most of life and the best of life is the voluntary part. And since business is voluntary, it doesn't mean that if there's this pie and Bill Gates takes a big chunk, it means we have less. No, it only means that he gets more pie because he bakes thousands of new ones. The only way to get really rich in America is to give consumers things they want. Yes, there are Enrons and WorldComs and Bernie Madoffs, but what's remarkable is how rare they are in a $14 trillion economy. When I was a consumer reporter for local TV stations, I could find lots of scams, do a story a night. But once I got to Good Morning America, 2020, the national stage, it was tough to find national scams. Because in a free society, even without government regulation, they don't thrive. Word gets out. The good companies grow. The bad ones atrophy. Freedom will protect us better than government. But people don't get it. People don't get that business will take care of itself just through competition, protect people. and that everybody wins. I mean, you see it even on the smallest transaction. It's where you get the weird double thank you moment when you buy anything. You buy a cup of coffee. You give her the buck, she gives you the coffee. You say, thank you, thank you. Why do you both say thank you? Because she wanted the coffee more than she wanted the buck. You wanted the coffee. No, vice versa. You wanted the coffee more than you wanted the buck. She wanted the buck more than she wanted the coffee. Business doesn't happen unless both parties win or think they win because it's voluntary. Makes us all richer. Capitalism has lifted more people out of the mud and misery of stoop labor and horrible poverty than any system ever. And yet it's vilified in every newsroom I've been in. I'll close just by saying, let's stop taking it for granted. Let's think about all the amazing things it does. Think about the fact that you can go to a foreign country, stick a piece of plastic in the wall, and cash will come out. And you can give that same piece of plastic to a total stranger who doesn't even speak English, and he'll rent you a car for a week. And when you get back home to Indiana, the accounting Visa and MasterCard will have it correct to the penny. You don't think twice about it. But government can't even count the votes accurately. And now we're being told government's going to take over health care? Give me a break. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We'll now have a brief question and answer session. And the first question is, what has been your most memorable interview or television segment and why?
Sadly, my most memorable interview was when I was doing a story on how pro wrestling is faked, and I got beaten up by a professional wrestler. But the one that's had the most influence, I would say I did a special called Stupid in America on the cruelty of the K-12 education system, another government monopoly. I mean, why would we ever think it would work well? Government monopolies never work well. Unionized government monopolies work even less well. And we did a show where we gave the same international test to kids in New Jersey at an above-average school and the kids at an average school in Belgium, and the Belgian kids cleaned the New Jersey kids' clocks to illustrate that American kids in fourth grade do as well as kids in any country. By eighth grade, they're way behind countries that spend a fraction of what we do. And by 12th grade, they're near the bottom of the list. The longer they are in the government monopoly school system, the worse they do. Americans don't complain about it because they're fooled into thinking their kids' school is pretty good because we're told everybody's above average. And they don't, you know, they often have state tests that everybody passes. But we're doing quite badly. And from this piece, the teachers union protested outside ABC, and we covered that and ran that, and it created a little movement to build charter schools, more charter schools, and so I feel very happy about my contribution to that. Just one more point about that. They always say, well, we're struggling because we don't spend enough money on education in this country. Teachers are undervalued and all that. But just look at the real numbers. Your commerce folks, they spend, I don't know what it is in Indiana, probably around the national average, around $10,000 per student. Do the math. That's more than $200,000 per classroom. Not capital costs, just operating costs. Think what you could do with that money. You could hire 3-4 great teachers. Where does it go? Nobody knows. It's a unionized government monopoly. They just eat money. But if the money were attached to the kids, there'd be a market, and all the kids would have better choices.
Thank you. There's someone in the audience who'd like to make sure that you know that the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles is one of the most efficient in the nation.
I did read in Kimberly Strassel's Wall Street Journal article about your governor that Indiana has streamlined its motor vehicles department, so congratulations. It does happen sometimes. Let's see how long it lasts.
You have a distinctive brand. Did you develop this intentionally or build on it as your work evolved?
I think I developed it because I never went to journalism school. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and after college I just picked the longest free flight from one of the companies that interviewed on campus, which was to Portland, Oregon, where they had me work in a TV newsroom. I'd never even watched TV news, so I had to learn not through college, but through fear. I just didn't want to fail. And I think I just tried to figure out what would I want to watch as a viewer, and I made stuff up, and this made me different and helped me succeed. It was my idea to go around with hidden cameras. Let's not talk to people all the time. Let's see what really happens. And then I guess I'm an angry guy. I wanted to go confront the bully or the crook, and that made for good television, and so that became my style. Also, I'm a stutterer. I've obviously largely mastered it, but at the time I was having much more trouble, and I didn't want to be out covering politics and crime with all the other reporters because I was afraid I'd be saying, governor, and I was going to be embarrassed doing that, so I found my own niche.
In your opinion, will we ever get a public option for health care, and why does the far right so violently oppose it?
I think we probably will get a government option eventually, because Thomas Jefferson said it's the natural progress of things for government to grow. Why does the far right oppose it? Well, why do the questioners always talk about the far right and the hard right? Never about the far left and the hard left. It's supposed to be equal? So the right does oppose it, and the reason the right opposes it is because the government option, if the government option were merely a competitor where they would have to break even or make a profit, and they competed fairly with the other insurance companies, it would be fine. If that were the case, it could just happen. Private investors would back it. But the reason it has to get seed money, another tricky word the politicians use, is because the market won't provide. Seed money means your money. They say, we're not going to have a public option. We're going to have something like it. It's called co-ops. And there used to be thousands of co-ops around the country, and they were great. There only are a couple left. That was a New York Times story. Well, doesn't it occur to them to ask, gee, why are there only a couple left if they were so good? And why do we need seed money from taxpayers if they are good? They would just happen. But I digress. The problem with the public option is that it would have two advantages. One, it could borrow money really cheaply because it's the government. You can loan money without being afraid, so they can pay lower interest rates, and that'll just gradually crush the private insurance companies. Separately, are you telling me that when the congressman's grandmother is told by the Medicare panel that, no, you can't have that operation because otherwise the public option is going to start to lose money, that Congress isn't going to make an exception and sock the taxpayer for more? It always has, so why would we believe them now? So that's why the far right objects to the public option, and I do too.
How do you see breaking the entitlement mentality that many people obviously have in America?
It's very tough. I don't know. I mean, the entitlement mentality is going to break us because it's a bomb that will go off. There's no way Medicare and Social Security payments can be paid without raising taxes to ludicrous levels or simply cutting benefits, which I don't think they have the guts to do. They'll probably just inflate the currency so much, so they'll keep paying you all this money for this care, but nobody will want the dollars because they won't have value. I mean, the rest of the Thomas Jefferson quote is, it's the natural progress of things for government to grow and liberty to yield. And I do fear the entitlement bomb is pushing up against that wall.
You have profiled teachers' unions and school choice. What do you think of unions' effects on free markets?
And the concept of the union is collective bargaining. Workers ought to be able to band together and bargain as a group. But again and again, you see the rigid rules. You know, free markets thrive on constant innovation. If you have to get a vote of approval every time, you just can't be as competitive. It's why Detroit's out of business and the non-union automakers are doing better. It's just you need that flexibility, which unions often eat. The insanity at ABC, which was unionized. If I on Columbus Day wanted to order, have a prop on the set, a prop buyer had to be paid a full time and a half day to buy one thing. He had to give it to the set decorator who worked all day, then hand it to the prop man who would hand it to me. They all had to get paid for this one prop. It's just that those businesses, and we all want to protect these jobs. All those guys are miserable, by the way. They're sulking about their jobs. They don't have enough to do. They don't feel productive and good about themselves. But the rules never change. They're just the only solution is to have a new company like Fox, that's non-union, come and clean their clocks.
Politically, do you see any kind of independent or, quote, republican, unquote, movement happening nationally?
No.
Okay. So who is the government? Is it not true that people count the votes, not government?
People count the votes, not government. No, I think government hires people to count the votes, and government can't manage things very well. It is not right to say we are the government because we elect our government. All these reporters who say, who's going to run America? And the next, well, presidents don't run America. 300 million free people run the country. The president presides over the armed forces and the executive branch and set some rules, but we are not the government. I have to work on that answer next time.
Tort reform means different things to different people. What do you mean by tort reform?
Forgive me for another than long answer. As a consumer reporter, when I first went out and I did stories, we would take a TV set into a bunch of different repair shops with a loose tube, and some would just replace it, and others would rip us off, and then I'd go back and confront them, and they'd deny it, and I'd say, oh, yeah, watch this, and just play the tape. Made for great TV, and the politicians would then say, oh, we're going to pass a law that's going to fix this, and they would say, we're going to create the Department of Consumer Affairs, and young John Stossel loved this because these politicians were paying attention to me. I didn't realize they were just using me to get their faces on TV. And they were going to pass a licensing law, which I praised because, you know, it sounds good. We license drivers and dogs, and it sounds safe. But 5 years later, I was still on the beat, and I saw that what had this reform really accomplished? Now there was this big bureaucracy, a Department of Consumer Affairs, and entrepreneurs had to hire a lawyer to try to figure out the rules. The fringe entrepreneurs had to go into the black market or not go into business. There were fewer choices, just raise prices, and there was exactly as much cheating as before. The bureaucrats didn't go out and do stings like we had. They just did what bureaucrats did, fill out forms. So it didn't work. And then I thought, oh, you know what's going to work? The trial lawyers. These tort lawyers, because they're like me. They can expose these wrongs, but they have real power. They can use force. They can force people to pay. And I cheered them on for a while, but then I saw how, no, for every person they help, they hurt 100. And let me back up to explain this. When they talk about tort reform, the trial lawyers say, what do you mean? Who but we will deter the bad companies and the bad doctors? And who but we will compensate the victims of their greed? And when they say that, the reformers tend to back off. But both statements are deceitful. Who but we will punish the bad actors? We've got laws against fraud in America. District attorneys, state's attorneys, all kinds of people who can prosecute lawbreakers and people who hurt each other. Who else will compensate the victims? We have other ways, Social Security, disability payments, private charity, workers' comp. None is perfect, but none is as bad as this horrible tort lawsuit system. Because what kind of system do we tolerate when 70% of the money goes to the middlemen? You may say, what do you mean that 70%? The trial lawyers only take a third or to 40%. But you add in the defense lawyer costs and what companies pay corporate counsels like you, 70% of the money goes to the process. This is a terrible way to compensate people. And it's a horribly blunt instrument. A study in New York State found that most of the people who were victims of malpractice didn't collect anything, and the people who did collect were not victims of malpractice. Terrible way to compensate people. And yet, and the second point is that we see the benefits. You see the $1 million that goes to the crippled child. What you don't see is all the children who are crippled or who don't get treatment for being crippled because the companies are scared. Years ago, the tort lawyers sued the vaccine makers and said the DPT vaccine wasn't as safe as it could have been. I don't know what the truth is, but let's say they were right, which I doubt, and they saved a dozen lives a year. Is it worth it? I would say no, because now there are only 5 American companies researching vaccines. Many of them just said, look, we don't make that much profit off our vaccine business. We can't take this kind of liability risk. Let's stick to our pimple cream business or our shampoo business. So are we safer with 5 vaccine makers rather than 20 in a time where we would like an AIDS vaccine or a swine flu vaccine? No way. But the lawyers are richer, and they say they did good. Well, that's tort reform to me means you got to stop some of this activity. Some of it's useful. It's a deterrent. I don't like the idea of capping payments because that seems sort of arbitrary. If you behave really egregiously, you probably deserve a horrible fine. But every other country in the world has something called loser pays. America's the only country where I can sue you for bad reasons and wreck your life, as a suit often does if you're not like a professional like me. You can't sleep, takes all your time, all your money. And then when the judge says, no, you're wrong, you could just walk away. You don't even have to say you're sorry. In every other country, you would have to pay for the damage you caused, at least the financial damage. Have to pay my legal fees. The lawyers, they're clever when they fight these things. Nobody fights better than lawyers because practice makes perfect. They fight for a living, so they're good at it. And they even rename loser pays. They call it the British rule, like it's this weird British thing. But it's the rest of the world rule, and America has the weird American rule that doesn't require that. So that's what I mean by tort reform.
What federal policies most make you want to say, give me a break these days?
Farm subsidies, the Energy Department picking winners, the Environmental Protection Agency, after it did wonderful things to make the air and water cleaner, now going way overboard and moving to cripple the economy, all the departments handing out goodies to their friends, and all of them, maybe. All of them but the Army, the Navy, and some of the Environmental Protection Agency. What do we need the rest for? America grew fastest when this was all we had.
Would you favor tax rate reduction for professional medical corporations, such as doctors, to list their medical service prices on the Internet, newspapers, radio, and TV?
A tax deduction for the ones that list their services? Well, no, because all these tax deductions are little specific slices that require you to hire an accountant. And we need accountants, but look, accountants aren't creating wealth in America the way the cancer researcher or the engineer is. We don't need more of these slicing and dicing. Let's just lower everybody's taxes and allow a market. If we have a market in healthcare, if we have health savings accounts, then the companies that list their prices on the Internet will be the ones that will get the business. It'll just happen.
Much has been said about the evolution of the media industry. How do you see people getting the news in the next few years?
I would say it's a fatal conceit to predict the future, but I'm sure happy that we have more choices now. I mean, there is a lot more schlock on, and I hate it, but it used to be when Walter Cronkite said, that's the way it is, that was about all we had, 3 white men delivering their sort of slightly left spin. It's wonderful that we have many more choices. It's terrible for people like me because it's harder for me to make money as the audience splits and the ad rates go down. But isn't that good for us?
Have you seen or are you going to see Michael Moore's new movie, Capitalism? What do you think of it?
God, I hate to give him the $11.50 I have to give him in New York to go to that movie. But yes, I will see it. I haven't seen it yet. I will invite him in my new program on Fox Business. People used to ask me, why don't you go to Fox? Because they really discuss these issues more than ABC does. And I said, I don't want to preach to the converted. And ABC, I'm reaching 15 million people. At Fox, they're just reaching a million. But now at ABC, we're reaching maybe 5 million, and Fox is reaching 5 million. And Fox will let me do the stories I want to do. So I left.
So what is the most fun experience you've had as a journalist, and what was the scariest experience?
The scariest experience was covering race riots as a white guy who was 22 years old, fresh out of college. And the nicest experience is this, talking to real-life people who I can hear laugh at the laugh lines and who give me some feedback. And getting paid for it. The money does go to charity, by the way.
So, this is actually more of a comment that relates to healthcare costs and the economy. Years ago, you had a segment on healing back pain, by John Sarno, Dr. John Sarno. Amazing, you changed my life, this person says. Thank you. Someone would like to know if they can get a video of that and would like to hear a little bit about that experience for you.
The ABC store may have a video. It was kind of amazing. I've always had back pain, and when I changed jobs last time 28 years ago, I remember starting at CBS and having meetings while lying on my back. And I had the MRIs, and they always find, well, it could be this, and try ibuprofen and these exercises. And there's this one doctor in New York who says, look, all this back pain came up after ulcers got cured. This is a psychological illness among high-achieving, busy people who just don't want to face what they're angry about or other issues, and they cut off oxygen to their back. And I said this to my medical doctor brother, and who also suffered from this, and he said it was ridiculous. But a friend of mine talked me into going to the lecture or to reading the book, and I just read the book, and bang, my pain went away. And then it came back, and I went to see the doctor, and he said, you got cured too quickly. You have to go to my lectures. It didn't cost anymore. And after going to the lecture where all these people raise these questions, but this can't be true, and he gives his answers, and you think about it, I left there, and I mean, I still get the back pain when I wake up. I ignore it. It goes away. He's published a couple books, and this was 15 years ago. I still get people coming up to me in airports saying, thank you for introducing me to the Sarno back pain book. You changed my life. And he's changed mine, except now I have shoulder stuff that I think is.
So our last question is, would you favor tax legislation to move the health insurance premium to a deduction for adjusted gross income instead of from?
Huh?
Yeah.
But I sure would favor equal tax treatment of individuals buying it and companies buying it for people, so then you can have a real market.
That was John Stossel. He's a veteran journalist who's worked for ABC's 2020 and now has his own show on Fox Business News. James Brown is the Executive Associate Dean and a professor at the IUPUI School of Journalism. Brown is known for his photography and for turning the IUPUI campus into a center for online journalism, teaching techniques, philosophy, and theory to reporters from all fields of journalism.
Where is journalism going? Journalism is a big, broad title that incorporates lots of things in some people's minds. I would exclude Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, and the like from any association with journalism. They clearly are entertainers. And some broadcast stations are clearly entertainers. We think of journalism as primarily print and broadcast news, public affairs programming and the like, magazine, article writing, photojournalism, graphic design. And, of course, many in the past, many of the jobs have been in print media. And we've seen literally a sea change in the economic viability of newspapers in the last several years. But the downward trend started way before then. The newspaper businesses were very slow to recognize the importance of the Internet, saw it as a competitor, did not embrace it early, and are now paying the consequences. Not unlike some other industries. If we take, for example, the photographic industry, Eastman Kodak was once king. They were a little late to get into digital, and now they're paying the consequences, just like newspapers are paying the consequences. Where does blogging fit in journalism? Everywhere and nowhere. It depends on who's doing the blogging. For example, if a knowledgeable person who carefully researches material blogs, it's a credible blog. If somebody is just spinning off gut reactions to whatever's in the news, that's not necessarily helpful to informing the public about what's going on.
James Brown is the Executive Associate Dean and a professor at the IUPUI School of Journalism. Thanks for joining us for the Economic Club of Indiana. Next month's speaker is Patrick Michael Byrne. Now, he's the chairman and CEO of Overstock.com Incorporated. It's a Utah-based internet retailer that's been publicly traded since 2002. A self-described classical liberal, Patrick believes that our nation's future depends primarily on a sound educational system and a healthy capital market. Patrick serves with Rose Friedman as co-chair of the Milton and Rose Friedman Foundation for Educational Choice. It supports legislative reform to bring educational choice to parents. Patrick has also founded 19 schools internationally that currently educate more than 6,000 students.
Proliance Energy, providing natural gas to more than 1,200 commercial, industrial, utility, and municipal customers. Proliance, adding power to energy. Information is at proliance.com.